I'd like to start by acknowledging my co-authors. This is a work that was done in collaboration with a lot of students and faculty from the University of Uruguay. And the main outline of this presentation, I'm going to start with some introduction about ecological intensification, following up some of what Pablo Titonel presented this morning in the video. Then a little context on agriculture intensification in Uruguay, and quickly I'll present two examples, one on grazing dairy systems and the energy use of dairy systems, and another example on grazing beef cow calf systems and greenhouse gas emissions, and trying to understand what are alternative intensification pathways in those cases, and then discuss some future directions. We're all for sustainable intensification, but sustainable intensification sometimes means a lot of different things, and we have this conversation in the morning. So I'm interested in a part of sustainable intensification that focuses on ecological intensification, that is the production not only of more yield and more agriculture product, but also ecosystem services. And in an environmentally friendly way. And in another way, that's intensification in the use of natural functionalities of the ecosystems. So I'm following up with, you know, Pablo Titonel and Siglinda Snap this morning that, you know, the biology, the ecology of the system is very important in this intensification process. So I like the definition that describes ecological intensification as the redesign of agroecosystems for increasing provision of food and ecosystem services based on the utilization of ecological processes by increasing reliance on biodiversity, attaining greater resource use efficiency, and reducing the need for external inputs. So what are real examples of this? And that's what I think the examples that we've been looking at in Uruguay are good examples of ecological intensification. There's Uruguay. It's a country that still has a lot of the area in natural grasslands. That map shows the darker the blue, the more area in natural grasslands, although these grasslands, because of expansion of agriculture and also expansion of forestry plantations, are being reduced. There's a lot of land use change in the Rio de la Plata grasslands, and natural grasslands are going down in the region, and the area in crops like soybean is increasing a lot. So this agricultural expansion, more area, and also agricultural intensification, that means there's more crops in the rotation, continuous agriculture. We're getting the crop livestock rotations are disappearing. There's more inputs in the crop production, more soybeans. And that means the reduction in natural grasslands and the increased use of grains for animal feed and also increased environmental impacts. So what could be sustainable intensification strategies for livestock systems? That was our goal, to understand what could be examples of sustainable intensification. So the methods for this study was basically a partial life cycle assessment. We started by defining typologies of systems, both in the dairy systems and in the beef systems. We collected all the management and production data, and specifically the list of inputs of feed, fuel, chemicals, and then modeling or maybe algorithms for various environmental impacts using parameters from the literature, mainly focusing in fossil energy use and greenhouse gas emissions. I apologize, originally I was going to talk about other impacts, but for brevity, I'm eliminating all that other part. So the example of the grazing dairy systems in Uruguay, we started with a database of 29 farms from southern Uruguay. Those are the parameters. Milk productivity was quite ranging from 3,000 to 9,000 liters per hectare. And the diet of these cows was a mix of concentrates, grain basically, pasture from grazing and silage, and on average 60% was coming from pasture, but there was quite a variation between 38 to 80% of the intake coming from of the dry matter intake coming from pasture. And then the net income, we also had some economic data, went from $130 per hectare to $748 per hectare, so also quite a diversity. The main point here was to explore that diversity. We did a clustering analysis looking at distances among all these variables, and we identified four cluster groups, and these four cluster groups have different production management practices, but also different outputs and different environmental impacts. And we think that these four groups could be described as different intensification pathways. And I'm not going to describe that numbers, but I'm going to give you this graph that has milk productivity in the x-axis and net income in the y-axis. And as we move from trying to point here, not showing. Oh, there you go. So from group one, which has the lowest milk productivity and lowest net income, to group two, that has more productivity and more income, there's two pathways here. It's one that increases considerably the net income, and this other one that does not. And so the blue circles are the percent of pasture in the diet. When we move from group two to group three, we go, sorry about this, but okay. When we go from group two to group three, there's an increase in the percent pasture in the diet. When we go from group two to group four, there's a reduction in pasture in the diet. That means more grain in the diet. And when we put the energy use, those circles now in red are the megajoules per liter of milk, the group three is the one that has the lowest energy use per liter of milk, and this group four is the one that has the highest. So I interpret this as a process of ecological intensification going from two to three, where we increase the use of forages, we reduce the energy use, we increase the net income and the productivity, and that's an example of something that we should be looking for. Whereas when we increase inputs, we might increase productivity but not income, and increase the energy use. Now, we call the group one extensive, group two input intensification, group four would be an extreme input intensification, and group three would be the ecological intensification example. So dairy farms with greater proportion of pasture consumption achieve higher efficiency of utilization of feed concentrates. So we're not eliminating feed concentrates, but we're using them more efficiently, and thus use less fossil energy and achieve better economic outcomes. So it's a situation of better environment, better economy. In the case of the grazing beef cow-calf systems, again here we had 20 cow-calf farms representative of a large area in the country. And again, we did the same type of analysis. We looked at clusters, and we found five system clusters. In this case, we didn't have economic data, but we focused on production technology, and we, instead of calculating energy efficiency, we look at carbon footprint, okay? And the idea is similar to the other one, but in this case, we have livestock stocking rate in the x-axis and calf weaning rate in the y-axis. And as we move from the more traditional system that has, you know, a lowest beef productivity, okay, with higher stocking rates, we reduce stocking rates, improving grazing. If we reduce too much the stocking rate, we go to a very inefficient grazing. And then again, we have those two pathways where we can increase productivity in this strategy that we call carbon smart, or we can increase more productivity. But when we look at the greenhouse gas emissions, there's more greenhouse gas emissions in this case than in this other case. Again, the logic is, how can we find a strategy that increases productivity, so it's intensification, but at the same time reduces environmental impact? And I think at this time of the year we're all thinking in circles, blue and red, and but I guess that's how it is. Ecological intensification in grazing beef cow-calf system then means optimization of stocking rate and forage production, And by optimizing that, we got better reproduction rates in the cattle, and so we achieved higher beef productivity and lower greenhouse gas emissions. Now, in terms of how can we further improve the systems, the main thing we believe is the grazing intensity management. That's a picture of an experiment we have in Uruguay, where this side of the fence, you see it's overgrazed, and this side of the fence is high forage allowance. So we have two different forage allowances, 6%. That's 6% of cattle per 100 kilos of forage, and this is 10% on this other side. We were able to improve the weaning rate of the calves from 50 to 80, and the beef productivity from 90 to 150. Those are results from Pablo Soca, and we're now measuring environmental impacts and biodiversity in the grasslands and greenhouse gas emissions in that same experiment. So we think that by improving the grazing management, we can get a much better outcome. So the two key points here: sustainable intensification of grazing livestock systems should rely on the efficient utilization of pastures, rather than just increasing the use of external inputs. And then improving grazing management, whether it's rotational grazing or high forage allowance, can increase productivity and reduce environmental impacts. So thank you very much, and I'll be happy to entertain questions. Well, this is really our interpretation of trajectories. It's not that farmers are moving from one to the other. There's a lot of things behind this. I mean, there's farmer knowledge and technical, you know, advisors that may or may not know, you know, better practices for grazing or for management. In the case of the beef cow-calf beef systems, there's very simple strategies that can be used to improve the grazing or to manage better. But we didn't do a follow-up on like why the farmers are doing this. No. So, well, I think you bring a good point of the trade-off between, you know, greenhouse gas emissions and other environmental impacts too. In this case, I think we're only comparing one system to another in relative terms. So we don't have, and that's something that I think it's something we need to think about as a community, is like what are thresholds? What are values that, you know, below this, like in the soil erosion, that we have the tolerance level. So could we think of something like that for like greenhouse gas emissions or other variables? Because maybe a reduction from 21 to 16 is not very important. Maybe it is, you know. So what does that mean really? The whole issue of the greenhouse gas emissions is difficult because in general terms, whenever you increase efficiency and you improve productivity and you reduce greenhouse gas emissions per unit of output, you're still increasing greenhouse gas emissions overall. Okay. Now, I do think that in some of these systems, there's room for, you know, reducing absolute reduction of greenhouse gas emissions, especially if we work on improved grazing management. But there's probably like a very narrow window there.
One more second.
Do you account for in any way soil carbon sequestration in these numbers, or is it
No, this is all calculated following IPCC, which does not allow carbon sequestration.